south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, now here's a weird twist on patriotism, nationalism, flag waving, and all that crud. This is an article that came out just yesterday from a leading Mexican newspaper. The headline is, Mexican Catholic Church labels companies helping to build Trump's wall as traitors. Goes on to say, the Archdiocese of Mexico is now accusing Mexican companies of being immoral for helping to build the border wall proposed by U.S. President Donald Trump. Then, it says, there are reportedly more than 500 big Mexican companies expressing their interest in bidding on contracts for Trump's border wall. How about that? Interested Mexican contractors are saying the end justifies the means, and a project like that will provide many thousands of jobs. Not to mention, a wall like that will need ongoing maintenance, and thus thousands of good permanent jobs, too. However, the country's Catholic Church hierarchy doesn't see it that way. A spokesperson for the Archdiocese of Mexico says, what is regrettable is that on this side of the border, Mexico, there are many, many Mexicans ready to collaborate with a fanatical project that annihilates the good relationship between the two nations that share a common border. Anyway, the article says, the Archdiocese of Mexico maintained that the wall is an open threat that violates relationships and peace between the two countries. And they continue to say, any Mexican company intending to invest or bid on a contract for Trump's wall is immoral and a traitor to the Mexican homeland. Then it says, Republicans in the U.S. Congress estimate the initial construction of the wall itself will be around $12 billion. What Mexican company wouldn't want a piece of that action? And though Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto has promised his country will not pay for the wall under any circumstances, that doesn't mean there isn't some interest to get that wall built from people on the Mexican side. After all, a project like that means a lot of money will be thrown around. Listen to this. In a recent poll of Mexican workers taken on the Mexican side of the border, nearly 3 out of 4 said, although they don't like the idea of a wall, they wouldn't mind having a steady job with a company that had a contract to help build it, especially since most Mexicans are inclined to believe the wall will get built. So there you have it. Mexicans, illegal and otherwise, hate the idea of a wall, and so does the Catholic Church. Meanwhile, more than 500 big Mexican construction companies are vying to get a piece of it. And as for average Mexicans, well, a job's a job and they have to eat too. You know, that reminds me of a friend of mine, an engineer who works at the Zion Nuclear Power Plant in Illinois. He's against nuclear power, especially since Fukushima, but he'll stay on begrudgingly, he says, because nowhere could he find a job that pays so well and has such great benefits. Besides, if he quit, he says, he wouldn't get his full pension. So what does that say about loyalty, flag waving, and nationalism? For that matter, belief systems and personal integrity. And in other border wall news coming from south of the border, I'm sure this hasn't hit the wire services up north. It says, according to the Pew Research Center, more than half of all the Mexicans living in the U.S. are undocumented illegals, and that 1/4 of Mexican-born nationals now live in the U.S., which relates to this article coming from a big Latin newspaper south of the border. It says the Mexican Congress is worried about the potential vast influx of Mexican citizens either returning on their own or being deported back to the homeland, admitting they love the remises, that is, all those billions of dollars being sent from the states back to the homeland, but they don't necessarily want their citizens back. So that's the rather open opinion of pusbag Mexican politicians, rather one-sided of them, don't you think? And the article says, to address this dire situation, the Mexican government has announced it will open legal aid centers in 50 of the United States' largest cities. These offices, it says, will provide free legal advice in local consulates for Mexican citizens, whether in the United States with proper documentation or not, that means illegal or not, who feel that their rights in the United States are in danger. What? Are you getting that? Then it goes on to say, Luis Videgaray, Mexico's foreign minister, says his country is concerned, I get this, about the human rights abuses of Mexicans living in the United States. Yep, that's right. He's worried about human rights abuses taking place against Mexicans living in the States. Nope, you can't make this stuff up. What he said almost sounds like a bad joke. In Mexico, you got a failed state of completely corrupt government, military, and police. You've got narcos killing over 40,000 people in the last few years. You've got whole classrooms full of kids disappearing. Mass graves showing up every month or so. Reports of weekly decapitations closer and closer to gringo tourist spots. But no matter. It's the human rights abuses that are happening against Mexicans in the U.S. Now, that's the real problem, right? So there you have it. Mexico will open up 50 legal aid centers in the States, but they have no such legal aid centers in their own country. Isn't that nice? Oh, and by the way, about building border walls. Did you know that there are 70 border walls constructed to stop illegal immigration in other parts of the world? Hey, not that they work. I mean, people jump over them, tunnel under them, pay guards to look the other way, even blow holes in them. But that said, did you know Hungary has a similar wall, as does Serbia, Croatia, Macedonia, Greece, Slovenia, Austria, Germany? There is a big wall between Bulgaria and Greece. There's a wall that separates Spain and Morocco. Then there's the Israelis with their infamous wall on the West Bank. And there's a huge immigration wall between Saudi Arabia and Iraq. Then there's India with the biggest immigration wall of all, 742 kilometers on the border shared with Pakistan. Then there's the most deadly wall of all. You just can't get through it, and if you try, you get shot at and usually killed. And you might make a good guess as to which two countries that borders. That would be North and South Korea. So there you have it. It's just some of the great big walls that were built to stop illegal immigration between other countries. So what does that have to do with anything? Well, just to throw a little fuel into the fire on this Trump wall business. And to add once again that walls generally don't work. People still get through, most of the time anyway. But they sure provide a huge new bureaucracy and a hell of a lot of jobs. By the way, being that I'm an alternative radio, podcast, free-thinking, vote-with-your-feet kind of guy, I seem to get a whole lot of email, spam mail, and junk mail coming from alternative websites trying to sell me something. A lot of times it's prepper junk. Now, there are a lot of good alternative sites, and there are some hokey ones too. There's one that I get. It's a free news service. It's called Off the Grid News. And I'd say the articles in that blurb are 50-50. 50% pretty good stuff, and the other 50, well, like this one, for example. It's the headliner for the one I just got today. It says, How to Build Your Own Extremely Affordable Family Bunker. Along with that, there's a photo of a nice, serious-looking 50-ish guy opening the hatch and climbing down into this massive underground bunker. Yeah, they call it the land of the free and the home of the brave, right? That's exactly how I want to live. Knowing I've got that big backyard bunker loaded and ready to go, even if my neighbors and friends don't believe me, I'll show them. I'm one step ahead of them. When that societal blowout comes, screw it. I'm not opening the door for anybody. Then, in 3 months, 6 months, a year, whenever, assess the damages and start rebuilding a brand new world, right? What? That's the plan? I don't mean to insult all you people up there who are prepping a little bit. I mean, everyone should be ready for at least a short breakdown in services. My grandma prepped in the 1940s and 50s. I mean, hey, that's what root cellars were all about. But that was, you know, because she lived in tornado country. And when that tornado warning sounded, everyone headed for the root cellar. Though back then in the 50s and 60s, it might not have been a tornado. It could have been an air raid siren signaling Russian bombers and the end of the world. Hey, you know, those were the days of the Cold War and all that. In fact, one of my uncles had a nice big bomb shelter, but everyone knew about it. But the point is, I get bombarded with all kinds of alternative news stuff. I'm sure you do too. And I've got a number of emails sent to me with plans on how to build your own bunker, your super shelter. And no one but you and your family is going to know it's there, right? Especially with that 50 cubic yards of dirt piled up alongside the excavation. So yes, I get ads and promotions for that stuff all the time. In fact, this one I just got today's typical. It says, if you've ever wanted to build an affordable bunker in your backyard, this will be the most important message you'll ever read. And here's why. It was designed by a former military man who was an avid survivalist and self-reliance enthusiast. And here are the reasons why this man's plan is so great. One, he wanted it to be hidden in secret. He wanted it to be impossible to break into, big enough to fit five people comfortably, enough food and water for 6 months straight, ventilated, renewable energy, durable and solid enough to withstand natural disasters or terrorist attacks. Then it says, click here, go to the website and see for yourself. Get the plans. Start building it today. Come on, is that anyone's idea of a stress-free plan B? The problem is, if you go through all that, it's a plan B just loaded with uncertainties and stress, which makes my idea of a minimal stress plan B sound so simple. First, you get rid of or pay down your debts completely. Then you get out of the U.S. banking and financial system. Start accumulating movable assets like cash, gold, Bitcoin, silver, and start transferring those out of U.S. jurisdictions. Then, in your chosen foreign country or countries, start buying some physical assets. A house, a business, land, homestead, mining rights, maybe a farm. Plus, all the while, you should be taking steps guided by your trusted local lawyer to get residency or residencies in a foreign country. It's called setting up your plan B. And you know, some people even have a plan C. I do. So the question is again, do you think building a big old bunker in your backyard is the smart thing to do? You know, I've run some numbers, and the cost of doing that is much, much more expensive than taking a few trips to a nice third world country, preferably in Latin America, getting some real boots on the ground experience, finding a lawyer, getting a bank account set up, and applying for residency. The point is, you go to where there's abundant food and water, cheap shelter, a weak, sort of useless government structure, in a place that's absolutely non-strategic in case worse comes to worse and some sort of international conflict breaks out. That can happen, you know. Hey, I'm not saying you have a plan B because you think war is imminent. It's always imminent, right? I mean, what are there, 20-something wars going on right now at this very moment? Sure, they might be undeclared, but they're wars all right. But let's take a look at Latin America. Are there any wars going on down here right now? Sure, in the past, all kinds of little conflicts, like the FARC guerrillas in Colombia. Then there's that undeclared war between narcos and other narcos and cops and government officials in Mexico. However, all that's nothing compared to what's going on in Africa and the Middle East. Well, we don't have to go into details, but again, let me point out that Latin America is non-strategic. I mean to say the First World do not have their missiles pointed at Bolivia or Honduras or Guatemala or Ecuador. However, Mexico is strategic because it's got such a long border with the U.S. So if there is a big U.S. conflict, there will be some spillover into Mexico. And the other strategic point in Latin America would be the Panama Canal. What's it they say? A quarter of the world's containers go through the Panama Canal? So if you're working on your plan B right now, do keep the Panama and Mexico situation in mind. Oh, and here's a few more things about Panama I don't happen to like. First, you've got the Chinese and other Asian groups owning most of the land on either side of the Panama Canal and the ports on either end and all the shipping rights. Well, that's not a good sign as international tensions rise. Yep, it's a very strategic location. And now with 75% of all the world's manufactured goods coming from Asia, a good percentage of that traffic going through the Panama Canal, when the next crisis hits, and it will, I, for one, don't want to be in Panama or have anything invested there. Besides, since that Panama Papers incident, what was it, a year ago now, there's no higher profile place to do banking in the world, except for maybe Switzerland and the Cayman Islands. Now, some gringos I know living and working in Panama think it's a good thing that Panama Canal brings in lots and lots of business. But it's those same people who are blind to the fact there's a huge real estate bubble in Panama right now. I guess when you're invested in something, you only see what you want to see, right? So Panama, a nice place to visit, but not a very good choice for your plan B. Not to mention, they don't have an Altiplano region. They've got Boquete, small little area that's almost Altiplano, but it's first world gringo and gringo prices. But a real Altiplano with constant spring-like weather? Nope, they haven't got one. That said, if you're going to live, work, play, or do business in Panama, you better have air conditioning, at least at night. All right, now more news from Panama. This article comes from a big Panama City newspaper. There will soon be a tax to finance occupational safety. The Ministry of Labor in Panama has introduced a bill which will require construction companies to pay from $19,000 U.S. to $100,000 per commercial project, which would go to a new fund for the occupational safety, hygiene, and health departments. It goes on to say, the Minister of Labor, Workforce and Development presented to the National Assembly a bill which will adopt the new tax aimed at the construction industry to address health and safety concerns. So what's that mean? Well, Panama's adopting its own OSHA department based on OSHA in the U.S. Well, isn't that nice? So any of you building contractors up in the States, or any of you who've had dealings with OSHA in the past, well, you'll be right at home if you get into the construction business in Panama. But that's not all. Panama is really opening up the bureaucratic floodgates, trying to be like the U.S. in so many other ways, too. As this March 27 article highlights, the title is Panama, Another Social Burden for Businesses. In a nutshell, it says the Panama legislature has just created a paid paternity leave. With the intention of maintaining egalitarian gender policies with regard to women in Panama, pointing out that the maternity leave will be supported financially by the payment of a fee to the Social Security Department, that fee being shared between the worker and the company. So there you have it. Panama, the economy is booming. They use the U.S. dollar. They got the canal. The Chinese are coming in and buying pretty much everything they can get their hands on. Gringos and Europeans are flooding in. It's first world pricing all the way. And now another round of taxes. Now, one little 10-year-old gringo kid I know who lives with his parents in Panama, he told me, I don't know if we're going to stay here. My dad said it's getting expensiver and expensiver all the time. Do keep that in mind as you work out your plan B. Speaking of getting on the fast track for your plan B, remember, registration is open now for my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar to be held off the Gringo Tourist Trail in and around Guatemala. Once again, we'll be giving you the fire hose treatment in the mornings, and at noon, we'll be heading out for our boots-on-the-ground excursions. Yep, we'll be going to places most gringos don't even know about. We'll be visiting businesses, factories, doctors, hospitals, gated, guarded communities, a world-class university, real estate projects, seeing the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. To sign up, just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link to find out everything you need to know about that week-long seminar and those fabulous John Galt four-day-long pre- and post-seminar tours, which, of course, are optional, but highly recommended. You'll also see how you can kill two birds with one stone. That is, go to the seminar and apply for your temporary or permanent residency in Guatemala. One of the last remaining cheap, easy, and fast ways to get a residency in a Latin country. Now, it used to be quite easy to get residency in most Latin countries, but those windows of opportunity are closing fast. You know, you should be thinking about your residency if you're working on your plan B. So why not kill two birds with one stone? Now, for those of you who can't get boots on the ground just yet, though you will need to eventually, that's for sure. The next best way to get all your ducks lined up for your own plan B is to take my Expat Essentials course. And you can find out all about that by going to www.expatplanb.com. Oh, just another crazy announcement here. Now, y'all know I have a YouTube channel, and the last 100 or so shows are up there, and you get to see the photos and the slides that go along with the show. However, I just got notified the other day that my show number 635 just got booted off of YouTube. Yep. Their algorithm says it has objectionable content, meaning, of course, it's not PC. Now, I hate to be accused of wearing a tinfoil sombrero, but I'm trying to figure this out. Could it be because I used the P word one too many times? Not the politician word, but the poop word. Same thing, right? Or maybe it was the use of the word hoe, not as a farm implement. You know, the whole thing's very strange, because you can go on YouTube right now and watch any number of scantily clad mental midgets gyrating to music videos from hell, talking about mofos and hoes in a biblical sense, rapping in infantile ghetto speak about incest, drugs, and cop killing like it was an everyday thing. Well, I guess it is in Cleveland and Chicago, huh? Then I'm thinking, how about all those raunchy, live, stand-up comedian performances? They're all on YouTube. But they find time to censor the Expat Files Living in Latin America show number 635. Now, the canned message from YouTube says, upon review, we've determined that it violates our guidelines. So we've removed it from YouTube and assigned a community guideline strike or temporary penalty to your account. Now, I know some of you listeners up there play around with YouTube and do some of your own videos. Have you ever been booted? Some say it's an alternative radio badge of honor, you know. If you're interested, you can listen to it in the archives. That came out Sunday, January 19, 2017. Okay, just as an aside, how many of you listeners out there are avid film buffs? If you are, you know the Best Picture Oscar went to the movie called Moonlight. Have you seen it? It's from director Barry Jenkins. For those of you who are into that stuff, it was the biggest Oscar controversy since Oscars first began. I think it was in 1927. You might remember this year they announced the Best Picture winner as La La Land, but it was a mistake. It was really Moonlight. Now, after his win, the director decided not to party in Hollywood, Europe, or Asia. He decided to go to the Yucatan in Mexico, his first time there, a place called Merida. You might have heard of it. Then, after a couple days, he sends out this little tweet. He says, "So far, it seems I'm the only black man in Merida, Mexico. Yet, I'm at this restaurant, and out of the speakers, there's nothing but the souls of black folks and black music." Then get this, as he went strolling through the little markets and tiendas, he discovered the locals were selling pirated copies of his own Oscar-winning film. And was he mad? Was he pissed off? Did he point it out? No, he thought it was rather funny. If you're watching this on YouTube right now, if they haven't censored this episode, you'll see he's holding a pirated copy of his own Oscar-winning film with a smile on his face, too. Which to me only indicates he got a flat fee for directing the film and does not have a percentage of the profits deal, or he'd be really pissed off at seeing all those pirated copies. All right, let's talk about the coins in your pockets, your change. And down here in Latin America, the change in your pockets even changing as of late. For the worse, too. Just like up in the States, many years ago, back in 1964, they switched from the 90% silver coins to what they called back then sandwich coins, which were nickel and copper, not having any valuable metal in them at all, really. Why? Because by 1964, the actual silver value of the quarters, dimes, and half dollars was more than the face value of the coins themselves. And then a few years ago, they quit putting copper in U.S. pennies because the copper was worth more than the penny. Does that not tell you the whole story of the U.S. monetary system? Well, you know the coins here in Latin America, they're called monedas, by the way, like money, monedas. Well, the same thing happened. They took their silver out of circulation and used cheaper metals. That also happened a long time ago in the 60s. But now, even the crummy cheap metals they used are becoming more valuable than the coins themselves. So what to do next? Well, Latin governments are making their coins smaller and thinner. Some of them, in fact, are like crappy bubblegum tokens now. And when they fall on the ground, they don't make a nice ding. They go thunk, like the nearly worthless slugs that they are. So as time goes on, Latin currencies always do worse than the U.S. dollar, even though the U.S. dollar is a disaster in its own right. Which is why a pocket full of change in almost all Latin countries now is a lot lighter and has much less purchasing power than a pocket full of change even 2 or 3 years ago. Just like in the States, not only are they switching to cheaper and cheaper base metals, now they're actually downsizing and thinning out the money so that when you look at it end on end, they can be about half the thickness of the same coin that was produced a couple of years ago. And you know, when you first get your hands on one of those thinner, lighter coins, you think it's got to be a counterfeit. Someone's trying to pass me some crap. But as it turns out, it's the government that's passing you that crap. Which leads us to our next Latin sociology lesson. Yep, it was a new one on me. You learn something every day, don't you? The other day I was riding around with a Latin friend of mine who owns a little advertising agency. Yep, he's an upscale, entitled son of a wealthy Latin architect. Now the son, he's not a child anymore. He's around 35 years old. Didn't go into his dad's business because, well, he liked to party and spend his dad's money. He wasn't too motivated or too serious about life. Now, even with the family's social and financial safety net, he had to do something as an adult, so his dad bought him a little advertising agency. Now he's married, has a couple kids, and of course, when he falls behind, his dad bails him out. Typical, huh? Was it they say it takes 3 generations of entitled kids to ruin a family fortune? Have you heard that? A long time ago, I even read a book to that effect. Well, I've seen it in action. I know it happens up in the States and Europe, but it happens here in Latin America on steroids, let me tell you. Anyway, I'm riding around with this kind of aimless rich kid. Nice guy, real nice guy. But still, I wouldn't set him up with a hot dog stand. He'd eat all the profits. You know the type. Nice guy, good family, fun to be with, but totally obsessed with sports and leisure. Anyway, we had lunch in the building where his office is located. And when we were finished, he said, "I need your opinion on a few things. Let's go for a ride." We whipped past his house and the cleaning lady got into the car. A nice, good-natured indigenous lady. And I'm thinking, what's she doing in the back seat? Are they going shopping or something? Is he giving her a ride home? I mean, she lives with the family. Something's up. So we're driving around. We pulled up to a bank and parked in the lot. My friend stuck his hand under the seat and pulled out a shoebox that was just filled with coins. Remember, here in Latin America, they're called monedas. Then he hands it to the cleaning lady and he tells her to go into the bank and change it into bills for him. So she gets out of the car, goes into the bank, and I said to him, what's up with that? He said, I'm running a little short of cash this week and she's getting some bills for me. Then he saw his opening and tried to hit me up for a $200 loan. And I evaded this subject by saying, why didn't you just go in? What do you need her for? He said, are you kidding? They know me in there. Someone might see me. And I said, so what? He said, I'm not walking in there with all those coins. Then he said, maids and cleaning ladies and indigenous people deal with coins all the time. It's nothing to them. But to me, well, it's too embarrassing. I'm not going in there with those things. I said, man, you're something else. Who cares? I said, you mean you think someone in the bank's going to think your family's down to their last monedas? Yeah, he says, I know it's stupid, but that's just the way our society is. Rumors fly, and next thing you know, people are saying the family's broke. Then I said, yeah, well, you are, aren't you? I mean, you're asking me for a loan. Then he laughed and said, yeah, it looks that way sometimes, but I know you won't tell anyone. Now, you might be thinking, why is he doing this in front of a gringo then? Well, because he knows us gringos are eccentric and not judgmental. I mean, look, when you go to youth hostels where they've got five people to a room and one bathroom, those places are loaded with gringos and Europeans, though they could afford single rooms in hotels. Not to mention, gringos like to shop at those big open markets, and upscale Latins wouldn't be caught dead in places like that. They send their cleaning lady. Not to mention, us gringos and gringas mate and date across the social spectrum, and Latins will almost always stick to their own socioeconomic class. Us gringos, he pointed out, are eccentric, and though we have the money, we don't mind backpacking or going low budget. That's when I said, well, why didn't you ask me to change those coins at the bank for you then? He said, nah, it's just easier having the muchacha do it. That's the maid. Which begs the question, what do you listeners do when you have a big old shoebox or a sack full of change that you need to spend or take to the bank because you're running short that week? I mean, we've all been there, right? Are you embarrassed someone might see you? I mean, you don't have a maid to pawn it off on, right? Or maybe you give it to your kids. Oh, that would be way too embarrassing for them too, huh? So are you embarrassed to cash in a mother load of coins? I wonder.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.